Take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it,
and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
CannabisRadio.com presents The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Hey, this is great, man.
Well, on the earth.
Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is Wednesday, November 23rd, 2016, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Welcome to the show. So glad you could join us today on this Thanksgiving Eve here in the United States of America. I know our Canadian listeners celebrated a month ago or so, but here in America, we're getting ready for the Thanksgiving holiday and all sorts of things happening here in beautiful legal potland, Oregon. We're coming to you live from Delta 9 Studios here in Southeast Potland, and great to have you here. Had a friend just stop by talking about the Thanksgiving, or as she likes to call it, gratitude holiday. There's also a protest going on tomorrow morning here in Portland regarding that Dakota Access Pipeline. A lot of protests going on in that area of the country. And we are following that just a little bit here at Delta 9 Studios. A lot of people very concerned about the plight of the Native Americans up there in the Dakotas and the possibility of spoiling some not only sacred lands for these people, but the water table for the entire area, the entire region. So we will get a report on that sometime in the future. We'll talk a little bit more about that and other topics, because I got to tell you, folks, as we move forward in this world, in this Trump administration, I'm going to be talking a little bit more about stuff that's not necessarily marijuana related. We'll try to keep it in the second hour. Toker Talk Radio, which is all about talk radio for tokers. It doesn't mean we necessarily talk about toke, although we do mostly. But I'm going to save that second hour for some off-the-warpath stories and maybe talk a little bit more broadly about politics in America. So that'll be in our second hour. We'll keep this first hour dedicated to the marijuana news. And coming up in today's first hour, we've got our cannabis radio news, where we've got the first company to be traded on the New York Stock Exchange that has to do with cannabis. So looking forward to telling you about that. We've got some activism going on in Montana to hasten the implementation of their Initiative 182. We've got a weird look at Washington State's messed up cannabis laws to show you. In New York State, they are trying to get more medical marijuana patients through loosening up the ability to get a recommendation. And we've got a couple of teenagers busted for marijuana, two teenagers with some links to some high-profile musicians. And in the Netherlands, an update on their cannabis laws and the ruling party campaigning to get them changed. So we'll tell you all about that coming up next in the Cannabis Radio News. Also on the show today, in Behind the Headlines, our Cannabis Focus takes a look at the marijuana depenalization measures that passed in 4 out of 5 Ohio cities this last election. One of those cities, Newark, Ohio, is ignoring the will of the voters. We'll tell you why and what we can do about it coming up right after the Cannabis Radio News. After our 420 break, we'll get into some drug war data mining, and we're taking a look at a new study where scientists are following up on something a lot of us have been saying for years, and that is cannabis isn't a gateway drug to hard drugs. It's an exit drug from hard drugs. We'll talk about that in the data mines. In pot and public policy today, we're going to talk about a case in Illinois where a police officer was caught testa-lying, and it's going to set free a man caught with 17 pounds of marijuana in Illinois. And then in the radical rant today at the end of the show, at least at the end of the first hour, we'll talk about the white-collar, blue-collar drug testing divide. Now that 8 states have legalized marijuana, the issue of employment drug testing is coming front and center. Couldn't happen soon enough. Then stay tuned at hour 2. Toker Talk Radio will take your calls at 650-LEGAL-MJ. The news is next.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
K cannabis use isn't the only thing growing.
So are we.
Grow with us. CannabisRadio.com.
Mindful of sustainable practices and limiting their environmental footprint, Sansal Hemp is always grown outdoors, as nature intended. By starting with uniform genetic profiles, Sansal ensures the plant will maintain its optimal performance and yield consistently throughout its life cycle. It is through innovative processes that Sansal is able to achieve pure whole hemp extracts and meet industry requirements and the level of quality desired by many of their customers. Healthy plants, healthy people. SansalCBD.com. Improve your lifestyle naturally.
Tommy Chong is ready to cut through the smoke and change the tone of Tilk Radio.
Hey, this is Tommy Chong. This is Ray Dawn on the other mic.
Yes, the eldest.
It was awesome. And we saw, it was called Dying to Know.
It's a love story between Ram Dass and Tim Leary.
Yeah, the gay Jew and Tim.
But he wasn't gay when he was a professor. He didn't know.
That must have been a shock to his wife.
The one time he, like, met a vagina.
The Tommy Chong Podcast, only on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome to my world.
This is the Russ Belville Show, annoying Kevin Sabat since 2012.
In the interest of fair and balanced journalism, the Russ Belville Show presents the anti-drug public service announcement of the day.
Young people from all walks of life have volunteered to take part in a frightening experiment.
Next.
For a short time each day, they are allowing their brains to be altered. Altered to the degree that paranoia has been induced. Altered to cause loss of motor functions. Altered to have adverse effects on reproductive organs. Altered to produce heart malfunction and destruction of brain cells to the point of memory loss. And acceleration of the aging process. The most frightening part of this experiment is that it is not an experiment. It's what slowly happens to you when you keep smoking pot. No one has to alter your brain. You've already volunteered to do it to yourself.
It's time for the Cannabis Radio News. Covering the latest headlines in consumer cannabis, medical marijuana, and industrial hemp. Cannabis Radio News is now available exclusively at CannabisRadio.com. Now your marijuana headlines in 4 minutes and 20 seconds. This is Cannabis Radio News.
This is your Cannabis Radio News for Wednesday, November 23rd, 2016. A company that specializes in medical marijuana real estate has become the first cannabis business to be traded on the New York Stock Exchange. Innovative Industrial Properties filed an initial public offering on October 17th. Exchange officials would not comment on the company's medical marijuana clients being out of compliance with federal law. Forbes reports that IPOs are down 42% this year, suggesting that may be why officials are willing to relax their legality requirements. Such wasn't the case for social networking application MassRoots, whose IPO was rejected by NASDAQ, despite the app having nothing to do with buying, selling, or cultivating cannabis. Montana medical marijuana advocates and patients are asking a judge to fix a mistake in a voter-approved ballot initiative that inadvertently delayed the reopening of shuttered pot dispensaries by 8 months. A state law that limited medical marijuana providers to 3 patients apiece took effect on August 31st after a 5-year battle, leaving thousands of registered users without legal access to marijuana. Earlier this month, Montana voters passed Initiative 182 to repeal the 3-patient limit, but the writers of the ballot measure accidentally put in a July 1st, 2017 effective date, instead of making it immediately effective. One lawsuit was filed Tuesday, and another was to be filed this week, asking District Judge James Reynolds of Helena to issue an order that would reopen marijuana dispensaries immediately. The Montana Cannabis Industry Association is asking Reynolds to rule that the delayed effective date was the result of what's known as a Scrivener's error that courts can correct. Washington State's bizarre cannabis laws are in focus this week because a pot shop owner wants to give away free marijuana, and the local news reported it, triggering a warning from state officials about illegal advertising. Carol Earhart, owner of 420 Friendly in Spokane, said Tuesday she was planning a giveaway of up to an ounce of marijuana to card-holding medical marijuana patients today. Since the passage of new laws folding the state's medical marijuana dispensaries into the retail marijuana system, shops like 420 Friendly that hold the state's new medical marijuana endorsement, quote, may donate product to qualifying patients or designated providers who hold a valid recognition card, end quote. However, quote, licensees may not advertise free or donated product, end quote. I'm not advertising, Earhart said Tuesday. This is a news story. But in addition to the news story, Earhart's shop had posted notices, since deleted, about the so-called Freed Weed event on Facebook. The New York State Health Department says it has filed amendments to medical marijuana regulations to authorize nurse practitioners and physician assistants to certify patients for medical marijuana. Health Commissioner Howard Zucker says more than 10,500 patients have been certified by more than 740 registered physicians to date. Allowing nurse practitioners and physician assistants to certify patients is intended to improve patient access. The agency says it's continuing its review of using medical marijuana for chronic pain, and a decision is expected by the end of the month. One teenage brother of musicians and the teenage son of another musician are in hot water after being busted for marijuana possession. Frankie Jonas, the 16-year-old younger brother of the Jonas Brothers pop trio, was busted in Nashville outside of a convenience store, reports TMZ. Meanwhile, in London, Rocco Ritchie, the 16-year-old son of filmmaker Guy Ritchie and pop star Madonna, was spotted by police smoking weed in public and subsequently busted for possession, according to Page Six. First-time possession of a half ounce is a misdemeanor in Tennessee, punishable by up to a year in jail and a $250 fine. However, Jonas will benefit from the recent passage of a decriminalization measure in Nashville that punishes possession of a half ounce or less with a $50 fine or 10 hours of community service. The penalty for Ritchie in the UK can be as low as a fine of £90 or up to 5 years in prison. More than 80% of the ruling party in the Netherlands has voted to revamp the nation's cannabis laws to include legal production. This has been your Cannabis Radio News for Wednesday, November 23rd, 2016. I'm Russ Belville.
We don't limit how much you smoke, and we don't limit where you listen. Cannabis Radio is now on iTunes, Stitcher, and iHeartRadio.
Great websites today need expert web design and development, and need to be e-commerce ready and mobile friendly. But building a marketable and profitable website can be an uphill climb. Ready to make your new website or replace your existing website? Think Orange as the new way to get in the black. Orange Hill Development works with Fortune 500 companies and offer the same top quality development service at a fraction of what other providers charge. Brands like Absolut, Carlsberg, and Nestlé trust Orange Hill Development. Find out why you should trust your website with Orange Hill. Contact Orange Hill for a consultation today at orangehilldevelopment.com.
Georgia.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson. Alcohol prohibition didn't work in the 1920s, and marijuana prohibition isn't working today. It's time we stopped arresting responsible marijuana smokers. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
The Russ Belville Show reminds you to never smoke and drive impaired. Hang out for a while and share.
The Russ Belville Show is proudly sponsored by the Marijuana Business Association. The MJBA, called by NBC News the Cannabis Chamber of Commerce, is the fastest growing business association in the fastest growing industry in America. I've been working with the MJBA for years, and I personally invite you to join the MJBA. MJBA also publishes the popular MJ Headline News on Facebook and the MJNewsNetwork.com, and Marijuana Channel 1 on YouTube. Visit MJBA.net for more details.
The world of cannabis is evolving at a frenetic pace. The Russ Belville Show gets behind the headlines to take a deeper look at breaking news in our Cannabis Focus.
Today in the Cannabis Focus, we take a look at the state of Ohio, where there were four communities out of the five that voted that passed a major depenalization measure. And first of all, a lot of the media report this as a decriminalization measure. It's not. It's depenalization. The difference, of course, is decrim means that what you're doing is not a crime, but merely an infraction. But you still get punished for it. You get a fine, you get sometimes your driver's license taken, whatever it might be. But you don't get a criminal record. Depenalization, on the other hand, means that what you're doing is still a crime. However, you don't get penalized for it, or the penalty is being reduced for it. And that's what happened in these four cities in Ohio that include Newark, Bel Air, Roseville, and Logan. There was another city that voted that did not pass it. And they're modeled after an initiative that passed in Toledo, Ohio, the year prior. What it does is it makes it under city code, the municipal code in those four cities, and in Toledo, make it so that the minor misdemeanor for possession of up to 200 grams of marijuana no longer has a penalty. There is no fine. There's no jail time, and there's no any other type of punitive or rehabilitative measures may be taken against the person who's in possession. And this is up to 200 grams. We're talking about 7 ounces in this case. So in these cities, the city code says that the punishment for that minor misdemeanor shall be nothing. But it still remains a minor misdemeanor. You still get this criminal conviction on your record. So that's an important thing to remember. Well, this passed by 53% of the vote in the city of Newark, Ohio. And the officials there are saying that nothing is going to change. The Newark law director, the fellow by the name of Doug Sasson, said the charges for misdemeanor marijuana possession will be filed under the state code. And this has always been the case when these localities pass these kind of municipal ordinance laws. It's one of those discretionary things where the city cops, when they catch you, they can charge you under the city law or they can charge you under the state law. And the Newark law director is saying they're going to continue to charge under the state law. State law is not so bad in Ohio. Anybody caught with less than 100 grams, that's about 3.5 ounces, gets a maximum fine of $150 and loss of their driving privileges. Of course, for many people, especially poor people, working class people, losing your driving privileges means losing your job. And then that leads to losing your home and homelessness and all sorts of terrible things. So it'd be a lot better if they could get charged under the city code rather than the state code. Now, here's what's frustrating about this. Sasson, the Newark law director, said that there's this precedent for charging under the state code because before this law passed in Newark, they had mostly charged people under the state code. And they had 170 cases back in 2015, 170 cases of marijuana possession. Only 15 had been filed under the city code. And the reason Sasson gives for this is that there's, quote, it's important to have a measure of consistency countywide whenever possible. It's not a matter of ignoring the local ordinance. It's a matter of developing practices that we have over the years of applying state law because it has a consistent application countywide. What he's saying here is Newark, the city, is within Licking County, and the Newark Municipal Court, the city court, also deals with some of these unincorporated county areas, so we want to be consistent, make sure we're punishing everyone the same, whether they live in the county or live in the city, and yeah, what a hassle that would be. But here's the thing. Under the previous law, according to Sasson, the reason most of those violations were filed under the state code is because Newark's city code used to be harsher than the state law. So Sasson is defending this, saying we're using the state, we used to use the state code because it was a better deal for the people than using the city code. But now that the city code is a better deal for the cannabis consumer, that doesn't apply. Now that they've got a way to keep their driver's license and not pay a $150 fine, you're going to stick with the state code for consistency.
Yeah, baby.
I don't know, man. That doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. I think that if marijuana is not such a big deal, which these people always say, oh, we don't spend a lot of time busting marijuana, it's not really a priority. Well, if it's not, get people the chance to keep their driver's license. Give them the chance to not pay a fine and obey the will of the majority of the voters. Aren't elections supposed to have consequences?
Maui Wowie. Acapulco Gold. California Kush. Our strains stretch everywhere, too.
This is the Cannabis Radio Network.
Play as Ted Growing, expelled botany sophomore and the biggest grower in town, only on Weed Firm Replanted. Available on the App Store and Google Play.
It's a lot of work being the biggest grower in town. Maintaining a room full of plants while dealing with a slew of eccentric customers, from a hardcore partier to the curious neighbor next door.
Is anybody home?
Help me expand my bud business by unlocking new strains, customizing my grow room, and completing challenges that you can't get enough of. Grow your empire so big you can see it from space. Low on funds? Don't worry. Weed Firm Replanted is free to download.
Download Weed Firm Replanted for free on the App Store and Google Play today. Get growing, Mr. Growing.
Growing green to generate more green.
Talking with multi-cup award winner Maya Elizabeth.
The Grow Show with Kyle Cushman.
I've always followed Whoopi, and I think she's fantastic. I've followed her advocacy over the years. Tell me a little bit how you think partnering with a mainstream high-profile figure actually benefits the cannabis community as a whole.
I have infinite respect for Whoopi Goldberg. I wouldn't just partner with anyone into that kind of thing. I'm into cannabis medicine, and I'm into making quality products that people can find relief from. So to hear that her vision was actually the same, it's been beyond a dream to manifest.
The Grow Show with Kyle Cushman, only on CannabisRadio.com.
This is Dan Michaels from DanMichaelsAudio.com, and you're listening to Radical Russ on CannabisRadio.com.
When you are starting up a medical cannabis business, you want a fired-up lawyer who understands the needs of cannabis consumers. The Law Office of Lauren Vasquez is your fired-up lawyer for the cannabis industry. Visit her website, FiredUpLawyer.com, or call 1-855-MMJ-LAWS for more information. That's 855-665-5297 for Lauren Vasquez, your Fired Up Lawyer, or email firedUplawyer@gmail.com.
Promoting the end of adult cannabis prohibition is easy because we have facts, science, reason, compassion, evidence, truth, and logic on our side. It's even easier when researchers catalog it all for us. Learn how to gather the facts on marijuana use, arrests, seizures, rehabs, drug tests, and more on this edition of Drug War Data Mining.
Today in the Data Mines, we take a look at an article in Scientific American called "Can Pot-Related Drugs Wean Substance Abusers Off the Hard Stuff?" And the story deals with the idea of marijuana as the exit drug. The idea that cannabinoids are beneficial in helping reduce the cravings for harder drugs, things like opioids or cocaine. And interesting, as I'm looking at the chat room and people are having a discussion about harder drugs, we'll get to, I'll answer some of those concerns in hour two. But one of the things that bothers me about this, just right from the get-go, is the framing of it. Can pot-related drugs, not pot, can marijuana, can cannabis wean substance abusers off the hard stuff? No, it's only if we take that cannabis and we pharmaceuticalize it and process it into some sort of pot-related drug, then we can think about how that might help people. So already, of course, now it's coming from Scientific American, so this kind of makes sense, that sort of framing. But it reveals that problem that we've got with the medical paradigm in this country, where the idea is that nature and people can't naturally heal themselves, that we have to turn to some sort of pharmaceutical, some sort of scientific formulation rather than just finding a way to live in harmony naturally. So that's the first problem right off the bat. But still, to have a mainstream publication, mainstream science publication like this, even investigating the idea of cannabinoids as an anti-addiction treatment is definitely a move forward. Now, the Society for Neuroscience had its fall gathering in San Diego. And at this gathering, they had some presentations. And this is what Scientific American's reporting on. One of them was some preliminary research showing that CBD, you know, cannabidiol, can quell the urges for cocaine in rats that have been trained to be coke addicts. These rats, they let the... And yet imagine, life is a rat, you know. You could be pizza rat, you could be caught by a cat. Hey, can I volunteer for the cocaine study? So these rats, they allow these rats to dose themselves with cocaine freely. And eventually these rats become addicted. And so then they give the rats these skin patches, you know, like the Nicorette patch, right? They give them a skin patch with cannabidiol, CBD patch. And the rats that had the CBD patch reduced their cocaine intake. The ones that didn't have the patch continued to consume as much cocaine as before. Interesting that it didn't end the cocaine intake, just reduced it. The idea that maybe marijuana helps you handle your high a little better, I don't know. There's also some research that was presented that showed an initial study on cannabidiol and alcohol consumption, desire to drink, and impulse toward relapse. Another possibility they investigated was the pain patients and steering them away from opioids thanks to the endocannabinoid system and THC helping the CB1 receptor when it's dealing with pain signals. The scientists from Indiana University found a way that they might be able to help neuropathic pain with this. And that's something that we've seen in a lot of the studies that we already have on medical cannabis use when it comes to pain, is that the neuropathic pain is best treated by cannabinoid therapies. This new information that they're getting through Scientific American is beginning to validate what we've been calling the entourage effect. And it also is so valuable in validating the medical role of THC. So much lately, you know, past couple of years, when it comes to medical cannabis, has been focused on CBD, the miracle we see with the kids and the seizures. And it has that special public relations aspect of being able to say, yeah, and it's not the one that gets you high. It doesn't get you high. It's CBD and it doesn't get you high. There's some doubt about that, by the way. But that we can talk about that in an hour or two as well. The THC, though, despite it providing the side effect of euphoria, and why is that such a bad side effect for someone who's fighting pain? It makes them feel good, makes them giggle. Makes them appreciate noodly guitar solos. Why is that a bad thing? I've never understood that. Oh my God, it makes you high. As if people on OxyContin aren't high as F, right? Come on now. So the Scientific American article continues with some professors from Columbia University, and they describe how these are very promising developments. This exit drug theory, even if we're going to accept the frame that the marijuana itself has to go through the FDA and has to be processed into some sort of pill or something, if we'll accept that, I mean, I don't necessarily give people the raw plant, but anyway, even if we go to that extent, these scientists are very clear in this presentation that, look, there's all this promise out there, read profits out there, but because of the Schedule I designation, we can't really move forward as quickly as we should. He even points out that cannabidiol, despite the fact cannabidiol's not psychoactive, doesn't lead to addiction, you don't get hooked on cannabidiol, it's treated like heroin. It's locked up. You've got to have the safe room that it's put into, you know? Turn the keys at the same time to get in like it's the nuclear codes or something. And it's frustrating to the extent, if you think about how derailed our science has been because of this war on drugs, that As early as 1974, we were recognizing that THC caused cancer cells to commit suicide. We could be 40 years ahead in our understanding of this plant and development of its therapeutic potential. Sad.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
How high do you like your profit margin?
CannabisRadio.com.
Dr. Dabber, hurry! Its temperature is shooting past 1,000 degrees Fahrenheit. It's burning up.
I'm afraid for this little guy, it's just too late.
What caused the problem?
Only Dr. Dabber can maintain the perfect temperature for a smooth-tasting, slower burn. This standard vaporizer lost all of its health benefits, sending it up in smoke.
So you're telling me that most vapor pens burn so hot they produce smoke, not vapor?
Correct! Keep away from those standard vaporizer pens and turn to Dr. Dabber. Doctor's orders.
Less heat? More flavor.
NARMAL stands for Responsible Adult Cannabis Use. If cannabis use is causing problems in your life, consider taking a break or seeking medical assistance. Consider ceasing cannabis use if you have a family history of mental illness. Don't drive or operate heavy machinery while impaired by cannabis use. Cannabis use is not without risks, even though the risks may be far less than those posed by legal drugs. This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Hey everybody, it's Radical Russ here from 420 Radio, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
Marijuana legalization is just the beginning of a process of restoring our natural rights to the cannabis plant. Join us now as we learn more about the rules, regulations, and court decisions that are shaping the landscape of legal marijuana in this edition of Pot Public Policy. Welcome back, everyone. 32 after the hour, and today in Pot Public Policy, we take a look at our constitutional rights, particularly the Fourth Amendment and the right against illegitimate search and seizure. This comes to us from an article in the Chicago Tribune dealing with an officer in Woodstock, Illinois. And this dash cam video that seems to contradict what happened or what he said happened when he pulled over a black man and arrested him for possession of 17 pounds of vacuum-pressed marijuana. So this cop has now resigned, and there's lawsuits involved, and it's kind of an interesting case. The traffic stop happened in August, and the cop involved was a guy named Eric Schmidtke, and he's resigned because the dash cam video seems to have caught him testifying. If you don't know what that term means, testifying, that's testifying with lies, as cops are wont to do in these drug cases. The police chief confirmed that the officer has resigned. The prosecutors have had to drop the charges against Philip Williams, the 31-year-old Woodstock man. He was driving the car, and they found 17 pounds of marijuana. And according to the police report that Schmidtke filed, the cop said he was on patrol on August 28th, and he pulled over a 2014 black Mazda for an expired license plate sticker. All right, so let me pause the story there for a second. Let's switch over here to Mike 2. And those of you who, if you're cops or narcs prosecutors, stay on mic one. I have something to say to the other folks on mic two. Okay, let's go. Hey, guys, if you're thinking about, like, you're going to traffic 17 pounds of marijuana in your car in a state that starts with a vowel, one thought maybe is, like, check your registration. Make sure your registration is up to date,
and like your taillights are working and your window tint isn't too dark and your car's completely street legal. You don't have any crazy bumper stickers pointing out your love of Jerry Garcia or normal or whatever. Just a thought, right? Just maybe, you know, don't do that shit. Okay? All right. Let's go back to mic one. All right. So pulled him over for this expired license plate sticker. And the officer, Schmidtke, the cop, he wrote, quote, this is in the police report. He wrote, quote, based on my 18 years of police training and experience, I detected the slight odor of cannabis from inside the car, end quote. All right, so cop pulls guy over, expired sticker, says he smells pot. Oh, I smell pot. And so from that, he calls the cop, the canine cop over, Officer Sharon Freund, and her police dog, Blue, Officer Blue. The police dog handler runs the dog around the car. The dog alerts because, remember, there's 17 pounds of weed in the car. The dog alerts at the trunk. They open the trunk. They find the 17 pounds of weed. They take the guy. They book him. Felony charges. This is the kind of thing. This is like mandatory minimum sentence stuff. We're talking 6 to 30 years in this state, right? So in Illinois, right? 6 to 30 years mandatory minimum after the dog alerted and they found the weed. Well, the defense lawyer, when they went for discovery, they wanted to take a look at this dash cam. Dash cam's got some audio on it. And what they found was that the guy who was pulled over, Philip Williams is his name. So, remember, the cop wrote down that in his police report, pulled him over for the sticker, walked up to the car. I smell weed based on my experience because I'm super cop. I smell weed. And then he calls the lady cop in with the canine, right? So on the dash cam video, he's talking to Williams. He's not saying anything about the smell of weed at that point. And Williams, the driver, is like objecting to this cop saying he's going to get the drug dog in. And the Williams, he says, I should be free to leave. And Schmidtke, the cop, says, you're not free to leave. Hey, I just want to pause for a second and give this Williams fella a little bit of love here from the Russ Belville Show for standing up for his constitutional rights. That's exactly what you do. Am I free to go now, officer? Am I free to leave? When they start talking about searches, you start asking if you're free to leave, and you start saying that you do not consent to any searches. It may not help you at the time. It didn't help this guy at the time. He got cuffed and stuffed and busted on a felony, and he's looking at 6 to 30. But he did the right thing at the right time. Because what happened then is that Officer Sharon Freund shows up with her cop, with her police dog, right? Blue. And on the video, she's talking to Schmidtke. And she's a little confused because she's like, well, why did you wait for me to bring the police dog? If you can smell it, this is her quote, if you can smell it, you can search it. Right? If the cop could actually smell marijuana coming from the car, he didn't need to bring the police dog. He could have just started searching. So Schmidtke said in response, quote, I don't smell it, end quote. And Freund, the lady cop, to her credit, says, quote, why do you say you could smell it? End quote. So so he's admitting right there on the dash cam that he didn't smell pot. What he had written down in his police report. The discussion goes on between the two cops. And Schmidtke references that Williams had a prior arrest. Oh, he's got priors. I pulled over a black guy in a fairly new car, and he's got priors. So, obviously, I need an excuse to see what no good he's up to. The I smell pot excuse. Oh, I smell pot. Bring in the drug dog. So, she does the search for the dogs. The dog alerts. They arrest him. They pull out 17 pounds of vacuum-sealed pot. So, he's unlawful possession, 5,000 grams or more. Mandatory minimum 6 to 30. car got towed. So Williams now has filed the lawsuit against the two officers and the city of Woodstock, saying the video shows that Schmidtke lied on his police report. And there was a grand jury that was convened for this case. Lied to them, too. Lied to the grand jury, too. So the suit, seeking monetary damages, and alleges that this is a part of a larger pattern where the Woodstock police have been pursuing wrongful drug convictions based on untruthful testimony. Testifying. They say Williams, who is black, has been often pulled over by police. There was the prior arrest he had in 2014 was a case where all the occupants of the car were charged with possession of marijuana before the driver admitted it was his, and the case against Williams was dropped. So here's the situation where the guy was arrested. Remember, you're arrested, you're innocent until proven guilty, right? Case was dropped. Guy was never proven guilty. He didn't have priors. He was not prior convicted for weed. He had been arrested for it. But that charge was dropped. Goes to show you that, again, even just the arrest can have a significant impact in your life. Now, the cops are trying to say, well, you know, they did find 17 pounds. Just, you know, this technicality. Oh no. Here's the quote from the police chief. Even though the circumstances were unfortunate and resulted in losing the case, this individual did in fact have 17 pounds of marijuana in the trunk of his car. That's undeniable. So, yeah. Look, here's the way rights work. If you don't protect the constitutional rights of the most heinous criminal, you start down a slippery slope where you start not respecting the constitutional rights of anybody suspected of being a criminal, and that erodes the entire foundation of the idea of being innocent until proven guilty, of holding the state to the standard of proving its allegations against people. Sometimes you get people that have a problem with the exclusionary rule, that were able to get 17 pounds dismissed from a case because a cop didn't follow a procedure. And the procedure in this case was a recent Supreme Court decision that held that you can't just detain someone, keep them on the side of the road until you can bring in the drug sniffing dog. Now, if you're the cop with the drug sniffing dog, yeah, you can go get your dog and run it around. But to detain someone merely for the fishing expedition of trying to find out whether they got drugs on them after you've already conducted the stop, you've already given them the ticket or the warning or whatever the hell, that's unconstitutional. That's a violation of our Fourth Amendment rights. Even people that are trafficking 17 pounds a pot in a car with expired tags. Don't do that, guys. Please check your tags. Please. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll talk drug testing in the Radical Rant and how the computer jobs aren't testing for it.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Seed to sale, clicks to conversions, and more. You're listening to the Cannabis Radio Network.
Oh, let the marijuana llama tell you something now. About a game for your phone, gonna make you say, wow! The game's about the game of growing cannabis for cash. Grow the seed till they bud, put the savings in the stash. Little by little, your empire grows large. Put different celebrities inside your entourage. You can choose to play with Snoop or me or Cheech and Chong. Cypress Hill, Willie Nelson, Wiz Khalifa with a bong. The name of the game is Hemp Inc., that's the point. Download and play while you light yourself a joint. The business of cannabis should be no crime. Hemp Inc. is even hot proved by the man who run High Times. Oh yeah, get it on Android and iOS today. Marijuana Llama out. Got to tend to me own crops, you know. Money don't make itself. Hemp Inc.
I'm Radical Russ from the Russ Belleville Show.
Senator Mark Madsen of Utah. Mark, welcome to the show.
Everybody kind of turns a blind eye. They obviously have to go to some other state.
Representative Lou Fredericks.
We're going to get something on the order of nonviolent possession offenses.
State Representative Kathy Tilton.
Where does adult and personal use be commercial use?
It's the Russ Belleville Show, the NPR of POT, weekdays live at 6 Eastern, 3 Pacific, exclusively on CannabisRadio.com.
Marijuana is not addictive, but listening to the Russ Belleville Show is.
New beginner guitars and banjos are often constructed much better than ones built before your time. Why struggle? Get a new instrument or fix the old one. The trusted professionals at the Fingerboard Extension will evaluate your instrument for free. Repairs are priced for people who work for a living. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com.
Must wage what I have called total war against public enemy number one.
I support a change in law to end federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
That marijuana, pot, grass, whatever you want to call it, is probably the most dangerous drug.
Some think there won't be room for them in jail. We'll make room.
I experimented with marijuana a time or two, and I didn't like it, and didn't inhale.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
Entirely legitimate topic for debate.
Radical Rant.
Well, today in the Radical Rant, we get back to one of my regular subjects. I was going to say favorite, but it's not a favorite of mine. It's a subject I wish would just go the hell away. And that's the subject of drug test discrimination in the United States of America. And that's what I call it, folks. It's not workplace drug testing. It's drug test discrimination. It's discrimination based on the content of our pee, not the content of our character. And I oppose it in every circumstance. I even oppose it in the so-called safety-sensitive positions. Yes, I do. I feel that if you got a person that's running an airplane or a train or rocket ship for that matter, and you're not conducting enough oversight that you can't tell someone's too high or drunk, but drunk is high, too impaired to do their job, then let's add some more oversight. Let's add some more management. Let's not start judging people by the content of their pee. Now, post-accident, sure. Post-accident, yeah, it's valid to determine what exactly was going on in the body and mind of the person who was involved. But this pre-employment and random bullshit has got to stop. And most primarily because of marijuana. And this is the subject that the Wall Street Journal has taken a look at in a post yesterday that's entitled, "Legal Marijuana Poses New Problems for Employee Drug Testing." They point out that they've got some form of legal cannabis use in 28 states now, 8 of them legal, absolutely legal for all adults 21 and over, and the other 20 with medical use at various levels. And they're pointing out that the states that have passed the legalization have still allowed employers to maintain this drug test discrimination, to be able to put the no pot smokers need apply sign up in the window when they got a help wanted ad out. It's discrimination. It's like the no Irish need apply signs back a century ago. There's no legitimate reason why people that use cannabis, even on a regular basis, should be denied the same employment opportunities as people who drink beer. And as we know, drug testing does not tell us that someone is high at the time or even that someone has relatively recently used at the time. In the case of cannabis, THC and its metabolites stay in the body for a long period of time. A day, 2 days, a week in heavy users with high body fat even. Even longer, we have reliable evidence showing people testing positive even after absolute abstinence up to 30 days after they have stopped using. So this is nothing but rank discrimination against cannabis consumers by denying them job opportunities and scholarships and financial aid and other things that are P-tested for. It's just discrimination. And they're pointing out that they talked to, this is the Wall Street Journal, talked to Amanda Bayer, who's an attorney at the Merrick O'Connell Law Firm in Worcester, Mass. And she is saying that firing or disciplining a worker for a positive drug test could open firms to legal challenges from employees. No company wants to be the test case. If workers are not in a safety-sensitive position, they probably shouldn't be tested, end quote. And this is kind of a sea change, if you will, in how I'm hearing employment lawyers and human resources professionals talking about drug testing. And the idea now is that there could be more financial fallout, more difficulty for these companies having to face these lawsuits in legal states than there would be from the benefit of keeping a drug testing policy in a non-safety sensitive position. The problem that I run into is that we've already got decisions in most of these Western states that affirm the right of employers to maintain these drug test discriminations against medical marijuana patients. Now, the difference being, medical marijuana under those state laws is still not legal marijuana. So when you look at the Raging Wire case in California, or Emerald Steel in Oregon, or the one up in Washington State, or the case in Colorado, the Coates case, the Michigan Casillas case, you look at all those cases, and you're talking about courts that are upholding this this discrimination because marijuana is still illegal. Medical marijuana just gives you an exemption from prosecution. It's like that depenalization thing, right? It's like it's still against the law. We just can't penalize you for it. But since it is still against the law, it's something you can legally discriminate against. Well, now we've got new cases that could come up. Because now in the entire Pacific time zone, you got from Alaska, Washington, Oregon, California, Nevada, Colorado, Maine, and Massachusetts, where marijuana use is legal. So now what's the excuse for the discrimination? Well, they'd have to fall back on federal illegality. And they do in some cases. I think it was in the Colorado case. They have a law in Colorado called the Lawful Off-Duty Activities Statute, which is you can't be discriminated for doing things off-duty that are legal. Like your boss can't fire you for joining the Libertarian Party. It's legal to be a Libertarian, no matter how unwise. So they can't fire you for that. They can't discriminate against you because you did something off-duty that was legal. Or you joined the soccer club, or you're in some weird sex cult, or whatever it might be. As long as it's legal, you can't be fired for that in Colorado. Well, when that challenge came up, the court said, well, yeah, but it's still federally illegal, so that you're not doing something lawful. Which really opens the question of why is the Colorado Supreme Court making a decision about a Colorado law as to whether or not it's affected by a federal law being illegal? Seems like out of their jurisdiction to me, but I don't know the ins and outs of that kind of stuff. But now we've got these other states where there could be these test cases. There could be more assaults on this drug testing discrimination from the point of view that you are arbitrarily discriminating against somebody for doing something that's perfectly legal. Now, in the case of, I've heard people say, well, Russ, they discriminate against people that smoke tobacco. Yeah, but do they give them a tobacco test? Do they test them for nicotine? Maybe they are. I don't know how that works, but I guess in those cases, they might cite the cost from the health problems that people would have. But if they want to make that kind of they want to make that same kind of excuse for discriminating against cannabis consumers, they're going to be in for a surprise when they try to run the science to prove their point and they find that, wait, cannabis consumers actually save us money. They don't cost us as much in our employee health care when they're, you know, buyouts for injuries and for the pharmaceutical drugs they'd be using. Anyway, this Wall Street Journal article concludes by pointing out that the Massachusetts law does allow employers to either prohibit or expressly allow on-site marijuana use. So there could you could actually have companies in Massachusetts that allow you to smoke a joint on break. And that leads me to this other article, which kind of brings up how this naturally has evolved. It's an article in the Californian, which I guess is the new, like, the cannabis for California. The Californian, because all the other good names were taken, I guess. Anyway, this article is entitled Drug Testing. Tech firms adopt don't ask, don't tell stance on cannabis use. And it goes into detail about how there's this white collar, blue collar divide when it comes to drug testing. As they write, if you design computer chips at Intel or web pages at Google, you won't be tested. But if you drive a SamTrans bus or operate a crane for a construction company, you will be. At UC Berkeley, professors aren't tested, but campus police officers are. The network company Cisco Systems doesn't test. The construction company Cisco does. In many ways, it's a digital divide with zero tolerance for many blue-collar workers and a don't-ask-don't-tell policy among tech-savvy cubicle dwellers. Now, I can tell you the good reason for this, and it's the same reason the NBA doesn't drug test in the offseason. They'd like to be able to field five guys for a team. And the same thing applies in the tech world. The tech world, if you started drug testing in any serious manner, you would lose so much of the best talent in the tech world, and they know it. Companies that have tried to institute drug testing have found their best programmers, their best creative designers moving off to some other company or forming their own damn startups to get around that kind of thing. I worked in IT for years specifically as a contractor, specifically to avoid drug test discrimination. Hell, you read the biographies of Steve Jobs and some of these other tech titans, not just marijuana built the internet, but acid and mushrooms as well. Because these mental, creative, kind of logic-driven jobs are enhanced by the use of these substances. But it creates this divide now where people that are doing hard manual labor type jobs are denied from being able to use this herb that is not just good for us tech types, for us creative types, but fabulous for people that are working in construction, for dealing with their aches and their pains and their recovery time. Fabulous for people that are working in restaurants or other real high stress jobs. And to discriminate against them in this manner, high tech and or for the blue collar and the service jobs. And of course, you know, the construction arguments, well, we don't want the guy driving the crane to be high. Well, yeah, we don't want the guy driving the crane to be drunk either. Are you doing pre-employment beer testing? Are you demanding that your employees not drink alcohol ever? Of course not. We understand that, yeah, we've got this legal substance called alcohol, and people can drink it after they get done driving the crane. They can go to happy hour and get liquored up. We got no problem with that. We understand that the next day when the crane driver shows up, he's got to be sober. Why is this such a tough concept for people in employment law to deal with? You know, I might get it if, like, being high on weed was an invisible thing. Like, there's no way to tell. But come on, man. Eyes get red, kind of glassy. If you can't tell that someone's high on weed when they're getting behind the wheel of the crane, again, you're not performing decent oversight and management. Let's quit trying to use this easy magic bullet solution of some sort of special number on a test that tells us whether or not someone's a good person or is able to drive a car. Let's get back to evaluating actual human performance. That's all the time we got for hour one. Stay tuned, hour two is next. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. You're taking seeds, you're planting, you're growing, you're trying, you're rolling.